In Conversation with Dr. Eve.
Really looking forward to this conversation. Dr. Eve, good evening to you, and thank you very much for joining us this evening. Are you well?
Thank you. Lovely to be with you, Aubrey. I hope that you are well as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, this is a big, big discussion. Depression and anxiety, mental illness amongst young people. What are we looking at here, Dr. Eve?
Yeah, so two things happened this week that really got my attention and decided me that this is a good time for us to be having this important conversation. Now, as you well know, we hold this space for people to be able to communally join us in this forum to talk about trauma. And tonight, where we are on the trauma continuum, because we look at the trauma continuum, we go from, oh, I'm feeling a little shocked, I'm feeling challenged, I'm feeling some stress, now I'm feeling distress, now I really have symptoms of PTSD, boom, bang, I'm now in trauma. So tonight, we're looking along the continuum. We're not in the face of trauma. We are looking at moving towards trauma because of a traumatic event, namely COVID-19. And what happened now this week was that The Lancet, which is a highly regarded medical journal, they published a very important paper, which is about the impact of COVID-19 and depression and anxiety, looking at it globally from 2020 through to 2021. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is what you mentioned as you opened, Aubrey, which is the vaccinations which are there for young people, giving young people authority and agency to make their own decision to go and be vaccinated. So we really do have a focus on younger people today. And this is what was so impressive for me, or made such a big impression for me in the Lancet study, is what their results showed, and we'll kind of go into them in a little more detail. But the most important results that came out, the most surprising, was that the people, the cohort that have been most impacted with depression and anxiety have been younger people. Mm. And secondly, women. And we know that women are always at high risk. And we know that we've spoken about, you know, gender-based violence has been the second epidemic. Now we know, too, where our attention needs to go, which is to providing mental health services for younger people. And this week, I work with younger people from about the ages of 16 upwards. And as it is, I had a number of my younger clients really reaching out with suicidality, because it's end of year, it's exam time, it's matric time, right?
Yeah.
Suicidality, overdosing, threatening to not get out their rooms, parents phoning me in despair. And so these things overlapped, and I thought we really have to open up this discussion to get the attention of parents or caregivers to say, are you aware of what is happening to the young folk who are in your care? Young folk up until the age of 24, because we talk of 24 as almost the end point, because at 24, that's when, from a psychological point of view, your personality is developed. And what the Lancet study found is that depression and anxiety peaks between the ages of 20 and 24 during COVID-19. So we're talking to parents, we're appealing to parents to join us, to call us, to be able to share their concerns and alert them to some of the warnings that might be happening, that have happened now because of COVID-19 in their children.
Well, give us a call on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. As Dr. Eve has explained, that we are on a mission, yeah? And that's really to have meaningful discussions around the issue of trauma, in the continuum of trauma. And tonight we are looking at depression and anxiety, issues of mental illness amongst young people, yeah? Up to the age of 24, says Dr. Eve. But what is the youngest age that we're looking at, Dr. Eve?
Well, young age, you know, it's getting younger and younger, young people who are presenting at school. So let me take it from a different angle. If you look at, you know, just caused higher depression and anxiety in younger people. What the research is showing us is that it is a direct result of loss of mobility and obviously fear of the pandemic. Loss of mobility as a direct result of school closures and restrictions, which limited young people's ability to learn and mostly to interact with their peers.
And I suppose also the rites of passage that we've become accustomed to, particularly for matriculants, the matric dance phenomenon that didn't happen, particularly next year. Couldn't play for my favorite team. I've been perhaps trying to get into that first rugby team for the last 3 years. Now is my chance. I can't do it. I think that there are a number of rites of passage that that created some sort of a tailspin, I would imagine, Dr. Eve.
Absolutely. And let's consider the neurology of the anatomy of the brain, the structures of the brain. The largest part of the brain is the social part. So when you are not turning on that part, it makes a whole lot of sense that you're going to become depressed and or anxious. And this is what happened to younger people. The social engaging, connecting, interacting, which is incredibly vital to their mental well-being, was switched off just like that overnight. They lost their ability to interact with their peers, to be in real life contact with them. Now, we know that they're online, and we know that, you know, people interact all the time online, especially young people. I mean, they own that space. But this research is telling us that it doesn't take the place of having in life, real life interactions, being able to go to school, being able to party, being able to go through all the rituals that you're talking about, playing sport. I mean, such a big thing in young people's lives, where so many social skills are learned, where so many sexual skills are learned, right?
Yeah.
And that was just shut down to them. So it is really understandable why we have this incredible increase in depression and anxiety at this young age. And for the older cohort, Aubrey, we've got unemployment. Now, I mean, what was unemployment? I mean, it's like 43% now, but what was it in January, February, March 2020? It wasn't much lower, right?
Yeah.
So we started with low employment. And then as a result of COVID, you've got all these young people who did come out of school, who weren't in school, were looking for employment, and that was limited to them as well. It makes sense, right?
The
depression and anxiety is just going to go sky high. So how have we as parents been noticing it? Have you been noticing it in your children? What are some of the things that you've noticed that have been different about your children in this last year? Maybe from being a very sociable, engaging child, you've got a child who's at home and locked up, and no, that's not just a teen thing. Maybe there is something else going on that you now can be alert to, that you need to be looking at depression, anxiety. And I'm going to thread in another incredible, wonderful piece, which is the opening, and we've spoken about this, of gender and sexual orientation. And imagine if you're coming out as trans or gender non-conforming at this point in your life, and everything is shut down for you. Access to services, access to therapy, access to a population where you can have some kind of connection. How much more traumatic that feels for you when you shut off and you're alone and isolated and trying to understand what's going on with your gender and your sexual orientation.
Yeah.
You know, there's a hugeness around that with young people. Have parents noticed that? Have parents been able to even access for themselves support or professional input or services like hormones for their children or surgery for their children? You know, this is really something that I want our listeners to be thinking about and sharing with us if they've noticed, and what have they done?
Well, Dr. Eve, you received a letter from a concerned mom, and I think that at this point it's important perhaps to bring that discussion that you had with her onto our conversation, and perhaps it'll give a little more, how shall we say, a little more context and understanding for our listeners to understand what it is that we're actually dealing with here. I asked earlier, how young do we go? I mean, listen to this story. If you don't mind me reading the letter, Dr. Eve.
Yeah,
The mom says, I'm writing to you about my daughter. I'm worried about her. She's 14 years old, and since COVID-19, she has changed. I know she is a teen, and teens act weird, but I think it's more than just teen weirdness. She was a very popular and social child. She loved school and hanging out with her friends. Since being back to kind of normal, she just isn't the same. She hardly speaks to me anymore, spends a lot of time alone, and doesn't want to go out with her friends. Even her school marks have dropped. It's even a big deal to get her to shower and wash her hair. Does she need medication or therapy? Concerned mom. And I'm reading this because I would like to get some calls, perhaps, from those of you who are dealing with this reality with your children. And perhaps this is the time to ask the questions that this mom is grappling with regards to her child. And this is the issue that we are wanting to raise and put a spotlight upon this evening, to say children up to as young as 14 and perhaps even younger are going through the most, folks. And we shouldn't just dismiss it as the weirdness, the ups and downs and the proclivities of youth. That maybe there's a real situation of anxiety, depression, mental illness that we may not be seeing. Dr. Eve, mental illness isn't like a big gash on my thigh because I fell off my motorbike. It isn't like the flu. It's an insidious situation that has so many different possibilities for interpretation, like this mom who is saying that, well, we're dealing with a teenager here, and teenagers can be a little erratic in their behavior. But when should we be really concerned, and about what should we be really concerned?
I'm not hesitating. I'm giving a big sigh because I had a call in the middle of my working day this last week from a mother who said, you know, I don't know what to do. My child's locked behind a door. She won't talk to me right now. Her friends have let me know that she's taken an overdose of some over-the-counter pill that we got for her to just not be so anxious. She's in the middle of writing exams, and you know, what do you think I should be doing? So the first thing that parents should do is let the child know that you see them, that you notice them. You just keep knocking on that door, you know. You just keep letting them know I'm here. You message them, you send them texts, you Skype them, you let them know that they're not alone and you notice. That's the most important thing to do. Let them know that you notice, because that's going to stay with them, that they're not alone. Because when you're in that dark place, as I always call it, you know, you're in the tunnel. And for that young child, she doesn't see the end light, because the part of the brain that can imagine and dream and vision gets shut off when you feel that depressed and that afraid. So you've got to let her know, you know, the sun will shine. You've got to give her a bit of spark of joy. You just got to let her know that you are there, and this will end, this will end, this will end. This will come to an end. This feeling will come to an end. Not to ignore it. Just not to ignore it. And as I wrote back to this particular mother, when the child does emerge, or when you're able to get to that child, you don't want to talk, because they can't talk. They can't verbalize. You know, young people cannot verbalize. They don't have the skill to be able to process their emotions. They don't have the skill to be able to use vocabulary, especially not if they're anxious or depressed. And all that I suggest that they do is just find a blanket, a heavy blanket, and just wrap them in a blanket. Get them to lie in their bed and put a heavy blanket on top of them, just to calm their brains down, to just get their nervous systems more regulated. No words, no discussion, no analysis of it. Just I notice, and just hugging, just heavy blanket. Or even saying to them, let's bring a ball and just throw the ball to each other, throw the ball to each other. In that way, you're connecting, and they get into a more playful place in their brain. Just the connection. You want to keep them connected with you all the time. So noticing, you can hear the big focus is letting them know, I see you, yeah. I can see you, speaking, not to just turn your back and ignore it.
I think that young people, younger people, even, let's say, children, prepubescent children, have noticed in ways that we sometimes belittle, trivialize, the break in normalcy caused by COVID-19 in a very, very deep way. Yeah. You made the comment earlier on that older people seemed to have handled the reality of COVID-19 and the disruption of COVID-19 a little better than younger people. And would that not have something to do with the fact that younger people have not developed, I suppose, the coping skills, the emotional maturity, the enough failures, I suppose, in life, Dr. Eve, to be able to deal with some of these things, and therefore the shock, the impact of this disruption becomes that much more difficult for them?
Yeah, and just not being able to use that advantage of age. And I mean, you know, Orby, when bad things happen, we mostly get to understand that bad things are part of living as adults, and that we have resources to be able to get through bad things, some of us more than others. And we know that it too shall pass. We know that it too shall pass. When you're in that zone, especially as a child, you don't know that. And that's one of the yep. most dangerous things of getting into depression and anxiety. You feel like this is my life. You know, I'm never going to see my friends again. I'm never going to be able to play ball with my friends again or get onto that team, as you were saying. It feels like it's forever. They don't have an ability at that point when they're so darkly down that tunnel to know that it will pass. And it's so important for parents to let them know that. So I want to bring in another element because you're touching on, you know, the adults.
Yeah.
And one of the things that are going to really trigger children is noticing their parents. And I speak specifically to women and to mothers or female caregivers, because children mirror, and we speak about this a lot, how we mirror each other, our nervous systems mirror each other. So my advice to parents always is self-care. And you know, we talk about this a lot. If you are not going to be noticing your own depression and or anxiety, if you are not going to be doing Pilates yoga and making sure that you are mentally well, your children are going to be further triggered by that. They need for you as adults to be taking care of yourself so you can take care of them. So that's where it begins,
yeah.
is for you to be able to notice your own mental health as well, not to just put so much focus on. And I mean, I work with parents all day, and I just – they look kind of shocked at me when I tell them that their focus needs to be less on their children and more on themselves, especially on themselves as lovers, as partners. And it's like they feel like I'm, you know, betraying their children, and they feel selfish. But this evidence that we have here tells it to us that your children are suffering because you're also suffering. You have to take care of yourself.
I'd like to invite calls from children, young people, maybe not children, but young people who are recognizing the symptoms and the realities that we are discussing right now with Dr. Eve. I say this, Dr. Eve, because as I said in the beginning of the show, that children have been given that agency to decide whether or not they're going to take the jab. And I suppose in line with that, I'd be interested to hear what their thoughts, their wording, their verbalization of this process has been. So if there are any young children, maybe not young, but children that might still be awake at this time listening to this conversation, and perhaps you are a parent, you've noticed certain things, perhaps it'd be good for you to bring your child along and get them to be part of this conversation. But I'd also love to talk to parents who are listening to this conversation and are recognizing some of the the phenomena that we are discussing in your family, in your child, in yourself. Dr. Eve says that maybe the one thing that can be very helpful is to show your child that you see them, that you acknowledge their presence, that you see them. Because I think, as you say, Dr. Eve, that one of the big existential problems that may be a cause of this is the idea that I am not. I don't exist. I don't matter. And that in itself might be a big reason why young people can fall into this abyss of darkness, of depression and anxiety. So give us a call. When was the last time you were just in your child's company? No analysis, no judgment, no big talk, just sitting around and doing nothing except being together with your child. Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. This issue of mental illness is not a joke, folks. It's not a joke. It's not a joke. It's real. So give us a call on 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. You know, Dr. Eve, in the Zulu language, mm-hmm. when you greet somebody, you say sawubona or sanibona. Mm-hmm. A very loose translation of that is I see you. I acknowledge your presence in the economy of existence. and you've just pointed out to me that the non-acknowledgement of anybody, but more importantly your children can can be an issue that raises deep depression and anxiety over and above all of the other peripheral issues, like the fact that I might not be looking after myself as a parent. I might have lost my job. My daughter didn't make it into the first team, hockey team. But just the acknowledgement can be a big existential issue for your children.
Yeah, I want to raise two issues around that. Let me start with the easy one. You know, we've done shows before on developmental trauma disorder. And we did one show specifically where I highlighted that the trauma for children is worse with the invisibility, neglect, and abandonment than it is for sexual abuse, if you remember. So here we have exactly what you're talking about, a sense of not being seen, of being invisible and abandoned during this time, because they are invisible. They have been invisible. They haven't been at school. They haven't been visible, you know, to their friends and with their friends. So there it would really trigger enormous sense of depression and anxiety. And then to really highlight the mirroring that happens between parents and children, I've been so struck today as I've been listening to 702 and Cape Talk, as there have been little sound bites of interviews with children, which of course you've heard, who are going for the vaccination. They've been interviewing all the time. And when I listen to these children, you can hear directly the voice of
their parents. Ah, yes.
I mean, were you not struck? Like I was.
Yeah.
Of these 12-year-olds saying, well, you know, there isn't any proof around the vaccination. I don't know what's in that vaccine.
Yeah, yeah.
That is an absolutely magnificent example of how children mirror parents. So this is why it's so important that parents need to be watching their own health, because if your children see you wobbling, they're going to wobble. I just want to really highlight that as well, that that the importance for parents to be having that. The sense of invisibility that these children are feeling is what is going to trigger, you know, the depression and the anxiety, the absolute suffering that they're having right now.
Let's talk about what the results or the impact of that invisibility can be, and I have a sense that it can be bad, Dr. Eve. What can we expect as parents if we don't deal with these issues, even in the most rudimentary ways, like just throwing a blanket over your child and just being with them, doing the being thing with your child? What are the possible consequences of not heeding to the warning that you're giving this evening?
Let's start out with kids who are young, children who are young. They are the children who are going to be, I mean, from very young, 2, 3, 4 years old, they are diagnosed with ADHD. They are diagnosed with defiant oppositional behavior. They're diagnosed with academic difficulties. They're put into special schools. They're put onto Ritalin and other medication. Those are symptoms of children who are needing attention, who are not getting attention, acknowledgement, and visibility in their own homes. And I'm saying this very broadly because there's research that will indicate that when there is developmental trauma disorder, children will symptomize, and we manage them. We don't always manage them fully, holistically.
Yeah.
We tend to medicate them. And then the cohort of people who are in my therapy room, Aubrey, are the adults, right? The adults, we've got the teenagers then who will begin with acting out, with drugs, alcohol, risky behavior, perfectionistic behavior, violence, defiance, violence against each other, men on men, sexual violence, which we're going to talk a lot about next month. And then as they get older, the difficulty of attaching in relationships, the difficulty of commitment, and the sexual difficulties that will arise, the difficulty in intimacy, of being able to be trustworthy, to make good judgments, because there is such a dis-ease inside of themselves, restlessness, anxiety, depression, that the only way they can manage those feelings, which started in childhood as invisibility, is to act out and lack judgment in terms of sexual activity and behavior towards their own women, their own partners in their own bedrooms.
Yeah.
So, and the other big one, which we did a whole show on a few months ago, which was that of illness, of inflammation and illness, right? That happens as a result of that early childhood trauma, because of the huge amount of stress hormones and chemicals which course through the body from very young and give young people and adults all kinds of inflammatory diseases. So it's, you know, pretty serious stuff that we should be noticing. Children.
Listen, I'm seeing the calls coming in. I'm not really sure what the technical problem is that we're experiencing at the moment as to why we're not picking up these calls. But all of you calling in, I see your calls coming through, but for some reason we are unable to pick those calls up. I hope that our technical people are dealing with them. This is an evidently serious matter, and I'm hoping and would love to hear from parents. I'd love to hear from young people as to how you've experienced this period, this time where we've been under lockdown, particularly for young people, and how it has affected the parents. Let's talk a little bit about how parents have dealt with perceiving that their children are not doing well. And I'm making reference again to this mom, this concerned mom who wrote to you, Dr. Eve. How would you characterize the reaction? Is it a panic? Is it what is the characterization of the reaction of parents over this time?
You know, what always surprises me, Aubrey, is just the almost naivety of parents. And maybe it is a reflection of how parents are so overwhelmed, because I'm not criticizing parents or judging. I have enormous compassion. I'm a parent. You're a parent. We know how hard this stuff is, right? But there is such an overwhelm that they're experiencing that to give attention to a child becomes a really, really quite challenging thing to do. So oftentimes what parents do is they kind of pack their children up into multiple activities. They pack their schedules from very young, right? And make sure that every single piece of time is put into an activity. And that's where, you know, the competitiveness comes in, the pressure to perform comes in. We want our kids to be better than what we were. We want our kids to have better opportunities than what we have. And we just fill their spaces. So everybody's like pretty exhausted, but the parents feel like we're doing really good because we're making sure our children have opportunities in life and we're filling up their diaries for them. Yeah, invisibility right there, right? You're not going to really notice if your child is depressed or anxious. So
isn't that in itself, Dr. Eve, a reason why we sometimes have the anxiety amongst children, this wanting to live vicariously through our children, reality, you know, where we push so hard for my child to be the captain of the debating team or the captain of the first rugby or soccer team at school. Could that not be part of the reason why there is so much depression and anxiety amongst young people, that I didn't get a chance to live up to the expectations that mom or dad or mom and dad had of me? And that might be as a result of that vicarious sort of projection of my own unmet aspirations that I've placed on my child. Could that also not be part of the reason why children feel invisible? Because it's parents living vicariously through them.
Yeah, and I have so much empathy for that, because it's with such goodwill and good intention, isn't it, Aubrey?
Yeah.
That perhaps, we have better opportunities than what, we can give our kids better opportunities than what we had. And there is such good intention behind it. What comes to mind for me is this show, I don't know if it's still on, called Toddlers and Tiaras. Do you know about it? Did you ever see that?
No.
It has to be, it should be banned. I mean, they should be arrested for abuse of children. Where you see these moms, only in America, really.
Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about. It is horror. It is horror. The little children are in makeup and they are overly sexualized in the way that they dress and all of that nonsense, yeah?
Yes, exactly. So that's what comes to mind as you talk about living vicariously through our children, to make them the beauty queens that we never were or couldn't ever be, right? That we do this to our children. And I'm saying this, I'm laughing, and I'm saying it with such an open heart, with such, with so much good intention that we want to.
You know about the road to hell, Dr. Eve, hey?
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, I see the calls are starting to come through. 011-883-0702. It appears that we've sorted out the technical glitches that prohibited you from talking to us. Please give us a call. 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. In conversation with Dr. Eve, we're talking about depression and anxiety amongst young people, 24 all the way down to zero. Yeah. Talk to us. What are you seeing? What are you experiencing? What are you not hearing? Because, Dr. Eve, I think maybe sometimes we're so attuned to what we are supposed to be hearing, supposed to be seeing. Could it be that some of the stuff that we are not seeing or not hearing are the signals, the issues that we should actually be concerned about?
Oh, yeah. We really need to be in the world of our children. We really need to be sitting with them and seeing what games they're playing, who are their friends, checking in with them. Not only, how was your day? Like, tell me about the maths test you had today. Oh, I remember that you said that your friend was, pretty nasty to you yesterday. How was he or she they to you today? Being, that specific, that involved, because they feel visible in that way. Again, I'm saying huge, huge empathy. We are so overwhelmed as caregivers and parents and women that we don't have capacity for this.
All right. 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Yeah, we are experiencing a few glitches here, Dr. Eve. I see the calls coming in and then they drop and then I'm not really sure what's going on. We'll have to do something technically as far as that is concerned. How long do you think this is going to persist, Dr. Eve? How long do you think the implications of this time in our history are going to be evident into the future?
Oh, goodness. You can hear me just sighing in the background, Orby. This was there was a mental health problem before, which really didn't get enough attention in any way. But if we look at the statistics of what this shows us, this huge global survey showed us, the horrific statistics that an additional 53 million cases of major depressive disorder and 76 million cases of anxiety disorders were due directly to the pandemic. I mean, that's a lot of extra burden.
I saw a report yesterday, I think it was from Discovery Health, that mm-hmm. suggested that there's been a 16% increase in the number of people that are looking or are seeking mental health interventions.
Yep.
That's significant. And these are the people that are able to pay for medical aid, right? What about people that don't have access to professionals who can help them see perspective in because many instances, it's about perspective, isn't it, Dr. Eve? I mean, for the young people that we're talking about right now, the idea that, guys, there is yet another day, we will see another day, can be a big, big message in dealing with some of these mental illness issues, because they may not have the historical reference of an adult to know that there will be another day. It's perspective, isn't it?
It is perspective, 100% right, that, you know, and this too shall pass kind of thing. I can also just attest to what you're saying around discovery, because, I mean, I've been in practice for something like 45 years, Aubrey, and this, in the last year since COVID, it's the first time that I've had people reaching to me, asking me for discounts, people saying, please, can you motivate to my medical aid, you know, that I really need mental health care right now. I've never had that before. It's you know, with so many people asking or making those requests to me in private practice. So it tells me that we know, and this is what the appeal through the Lancet journal is, that we really need to be providing more resources, developing more resources for people to make sure that this epidemic, because they're calling it an epidemic of mental health, mental illness, especially amongst young people and women, is going to be an enormous burden on the public health of every single country, the government of every single country, an enormous burden. And it comes down to even reproductive health of women, impacts enormously on reproductive health, on fertility, infertility,
yeah,
on miscarriages, on pregnancies, on what happens to postpartum, PTSD postpartum in women. It's ongoing.
Yeah.
It's a really, really very serious situation that we find ourselves in, especially for these younger people, these kids who have gone to school and had disruptions. I mean, there's nothing worse for a child than a disruption and unpredictability. Nothing worse for all of us, especially a young child whose life
have we been here before as a species? I mean, have we been here before in the way that we are now? This huge existential crisis that we all feel, these issues of mental health, have we been here before?
Certainly, there've been wars, but there's different kind of mental health, because people know that that will come to an end. And of course, there have been other plagues and big flu epidemics and Ebola. You know, we know that that's been there. I think what's really different, or what's been said is very different, is that we are now taking mental health seriously. Before, you know, mental illness was a stigma, right? It was something that you just kind of kept in your back door. You locked the child away, or you put somebody into an institution, you threw the key away, or you just drug them up. Now, today, we know so much more, especially about trauma and about mental illness and mental health. We recognize it now more in the same realm, in the same value as physical health. We know that the two go together. And that's what's really shifted things, Aubrey, is that we now are honoring the mental health of people just as much as we do their physical health.
And
of course, you know, sexual health is part of that all the time. And we talk about the right for people to have mental health, the right for people to have sexual health, the right for people to have physical health. It's a human right to be able to have mental health.
Dr. Eve, one of the things that you've said was that that, you know, I mean, it really is resonating quite strongly with me, the issue of acknowledging your child's presence, your child's mm-hmm. existence. And you spoke about the fact that sometimes it's not about saying anything. It's not about saying something deep and meaningful. It's just being in the company of your child, in the presence of your child. Isn't that a bit weird? Won't your child look at you and think, Mom, Dad, that's weird?
What comes to mind is there was a wonderful study that was done looking at the impact of parents on their phones. So I'm kind of answering in a roundabout way, that when you look at, you know, any movie, any series, you see people sitting on their phones. You know, we know that we just walk anywhere and people just reach for their phones. It's become like the drug of choice, right? And what the study found was that even when the phone is turned down at the table, there is a disconnection that happens, that that child feels invisible. There's a disconnection that happens. So the advice is given that the phones should not even be visible anywhere, not even be visible. It's almost like the affair. You know, it's a third person in the relationship. You've got to get it out of sight because the child feels so threatened by that. So that's just one way of being able to let your child know you're really present with them, when you can put your own devices off and away, just completely out the room, and be completely focused on, even if you're sitting there in silence. It's wonderful to be able to share experiences, watching movies together, reading books together, discussing books, listening to podcasts together, music, getting to their world, as I say, video games, playing games with them, being really able to raise conversations, we call, you know, becoming a teachable, using teachable moments, and becoming a parent who's really present with their child in those teachable moments. It's about being present in an authentic.
Dr. Eve, always great talking to you. How do people follow you?
Get onto Instagram, which is my favorite, my drug of choice in terms of platforms.
Yeah.
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And onto my site, dreve.co.za. And you can always WhatsApp me. You'll find my WhatsApp line on my site, dreve.co.za. And follow me. We have campaigns all the time. This month has been about sexual pleasure. And next month we'll do the big reveal of what we – well, I'm going to tell you now, Aubrey, because, yep, you know, this is important. We're going to be talking about masculinity in November.
Yeah.
In defiance of the 16 days of violence against women and children, because women are violated because of men. And we're going to be doing an educational campaign around toxicity and masculinity. So I hope that people will join the campaign just on Instagram every day, learning, becoming informed around how to manage masculinity a little differently.
Dr. Eve, thank you so much for joining us. Much appreciated. Let's talk again in 2 weeks' time.